Welcome to the Fuller Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Wednesday, the 16th of June, recording at 8:39 p.m. British Summer Time. Well, once again, we have very much an environment of choppy, ranging, sort of nervous whipsaw markets in which it's hard to have a great deal of confidence in any trend. And really, I could stop right there and say we shouldn't be doing too much in here in this environment except watching and waiting. And as I've said before, the markets go through periods where we get wonderful, consistent, rhythmic trends. Those are the great money-making opportunities. We had lots of those this time last year, and they carried right on into 2004, well into the first quarter of this year. But one by one, they gave way from January onwards to various different reactions or ranging trends. And then we've had some vicious spikes in a few things, like some of the supply and elasticity trades, some of the better performing metals like silver. Okay. Well, where do we stand now in terms of the stock market activity? Range bound, as you know, very much for the most part. Markets are still showing a firm tone in here overall, though, so they are moving towards, at least the Western markets, North American markets, European markets, are moving towards the upper side of those trading bands, where investors will be well aware of prior resistance and will be a little bit apprehensive, not surprisingly. And when I see markets moving up, I'm aware of a rule of thumb from the chart seminar. Rule of thumb, of course, for those of you for whom English is not the first language. I have to bear in mind that there are subscribers from over 100 different countries listening in. And the rule of thumb, though, is that a failed breakout from a recognizable trading range very often results in a test to the other side of the trading range, at least. And of course, last time we were seeing a number of Western indices testing their April lows. Now, not all of them broke beneath them, but some did. And now these markets subsequently turned around and began to rally at the beginning of this month, and are pushing back up, and a number of them are actually going to test the higher side of their current ranges, and are not far off doing so. How to actually play it in here? Well, excuse me, as you know, I increased some short positions. I went from some very light, partially hedged shorts to that partially hedged some of the long positions that I hold, to more short, probably net short overall, though it's difficult to work out exactly and what that position is. But at this stage, I think in terms of actually playing it, and I'm trying to do as little as possible here, but let's talk to the long-only people here. When I look at the stock market, I think in terms of lead indicators, and you might remember back in this time last year, a little earlier, I talked about the bank shares, a terrific strength you were getting from the bank shares, included the U.S. bank shares, number of shares in the U.K. like Barclays and HSBC, and in the U.S. we had J.P. Morgan, Citigroup, and the best of all of the ones that I was watching closely, and fortunately also participated in was the UFJ Holdings in Japan, and they were showing absolutely outstanding relative strength. Well, at the early stages of a cycle, I expect banks to lead. It's quite logical that they would lead as a process of monetary reflation is underway and a sentiment is beginning to improve and people are becoming more optimistic about economic recovery. And indeed, they did lead. In other sectors, you do think that house builders and stocks like that would tend to do quite well at that stage. Tech would do well, getting a fair amount of short covering. Late stage, when we're really in very much the end game and beyond, when the market has already peaked, and it's not etched in granite here that these markets have seen the end of the actual highs of their technical bulls, although I've been saying all along, I've been saying for months that the highs that we've seen to date, that they're penultimate highs, if not the actual highs. But at this stage of the cycle, we'd expect the banks to be underperforming, and they certainly are. I may put up a few of these charts tomorrow for you to see. And the house builders, they are underperforming. That's not surprising with interest rates moving up, which is of course a negative for the stock market. I was talking to Stephen Mitchell today, who is reviewing a host of, one of the analysts here at Stocky Research is reviewing a host of UK shares, and about this very phenomenon. And he's liking shorts in the house building, shorts in the banks. And so, well, what do you like, Stephen? What are you long? And well, not surprisingly, lots of oils and gas companies that are showing very good relative strength in here right now. Now, they are, of course, those very cyclical commodity-related stocks that classically get the strong move at the very end of the cycle, when others are beginning to top out or have already topped out among the leading groups. So I think that puts the whole picture in a bit of perspective as far as I'm concerned. And so again, I think, and as far as the long-only investors are concerned, I would be overweight in high yielders where you can find them. I would be overweight in energy stocks. I would have a very defensive structure to my portfolio overall. Okay, now moving on from there, what about bond markets? First let me just run through what some of these markets have done. I said the stock markets have done. Tone has been firm in here today generally. I want to mention a little bit more about Japan. The Nikkei was up 254. That was 2.25%. That was quite good. And the second section index is moving up towards its high that we'd seen a couple of months ago, two, 3 months ago. Now, the second section peaked spectacularly after putting on a late stage march of 33 out of 35 consecutive days on the upside, ended in a key day reversal. You probably remember that chart, and pulled back, retested it, and then flopped. And subsequently, it's been pushing back up towards that high, and it's within a striking distance. And it has accelerated a little bit in the very short term. I regard this as a lead indicator overall, and it would be very impressive to see the second section index break above that former high, hold the gain, consolidate it, and so then start to push ahead again. Now, that's a tall order in my book, and it would take some time for that to occur, at least not to break through, but for the gain to be consolidated. And we'll want to look for that, but I will pay close attention to that, and again, I'll illustrate that today. Tomorrow or Friday, as well as one of the more interesting charts to watch. Now, as far as Japan is concerned, I've said for months and months that among the developed markets, if you're going to have one, if you're going to be overweight in one area, be overweight in Japan. Lots and lots of other people have been saying that. At least my claim is that I've been saying it since May last year. And I will maintain that view, I suspect, for really quite a long time. You know the bullish arguments for Japan overall, but right now I'm quite light in Japan, except for some pension fund positions, such as contributory pension funds that I have here at StockCube, that where that money has to be channeled into specific areas, and I remain long as Japanese and Asia Pacific funds. And this the fund is fortunately weighted heavily towards Japan, which is doing best at the moment. Going back to those stock market cycles, what I don't like again is the general lag, though, that we see in emerging Asia, which had led on the way up. But a number of those indices have firmed a bit recently in this general stock market rally, but they're way behind, way underperforming in terms of relative strength. That's not a good sign overall. I do hold some positions there. I'm not even remotely considering selling anywhere near this level. If I underestimate the upside scope and we see top testing highs, let alone more, I would very, very seriously consider almost certainly lightened positions there. Conversely, if they were to take a hammering from current levels, I would get interested and start buying again because I do have a lot of cash, as you probably recall. Now, moving on to the bond markets. A little bit of profit taking in here today. The U.S. 30-year Treasury bond, which had a spectacular day on the upside yesterday, is down 14.30 seconds. That's not a lot. So I view that at this stage as looking more like a consolidation than anything else. The U.S. Treasuries are above the levels where I have previously taken profits on short positions, and they are at a level where before I knew how they were going to get there, I would have happily considered selling short again, commencing on a baby steps basis. But the how they got there is the important part, and from a market that was in a small trading range above the August low, they really did spike upwards yesterday, so it was such a big dynamic. It wasn't an accelerating dynamic, it was just a powerful move out of a trading range. So I'm certainly not, or I can resist the temptation to short those. The other ones that I've been watching that I would like to be short again, having previously taken my profits on the short positions a couple of times, are the JGBs. Now, I said that the U.S. market should certainly support the JGBs overnight. Well, it did in the opening, in the early hours of trading. Then they gave up the whole gain and went even lower. So there's a lot of heavy selling hitting that that market. I suspect that a number of the hedge funds are concentrating on the JGB shorts right now. That market looks very bearish overall, but it's also a bit overstretched and a bit oversold in the short term. That doesn't mean it has to stop going down, but I'm reluctant to chase at this time. But put a pistol to my head, there's no doubt I'd be short bonds. In the currency markets, now we've had some interesting action in here today. And you know, I was saying yesterday that looking around at these currencies, and my goodness, you know, one will be strong one day and then it'll be weak the next, and we're sort of getting a rotational move. And yesterday, the euro was really quite strong and the yen was strong. Well, today those are both soft and the euro has come thumping down against the dollar. It's a dollar that's gone top of the pops in here today. And the euro is currently down 154 at one, just a fraction above 120 here against the greenback. So vicious action here in terms of these very short or very narrow, I should say, trading ranges that we're getting in most of the currencies. And I'm not doing anything there at the moment, and rather relieved at that. I told you, I've said before, that if I did have any positions that I'd probably be a bit short the dollar against the yen. I'd probably be well, that's enough. not tempted at the moment. I wish it's time to keep one's head down, I feel, and I wish I'd kept my head down a good deal more than I have. Incidentally, and I'm jumping around here, I know, but I tell you everything I do, and I have rolled over. That happened automatically here. Some of my June spread bet futures positions being rolled over, and a position in Newmont Mining which is my main, well, one of my main stakes in gold shares that I hold pretty much on a long-term basis. That's been rolled over. That was rolled over at a loss. I think previous position was in it 42. It was rolled over at 36 or so and a half. Ouch. These are 3-month contracts. I'm here on the spread bet positions. I use that for the leverage. I will stick with that because I think that the mining shares are not all that expensive relative to their potential, although I'd be pleasantly surprised if the potential came early rather than later. Now, getting back to the currencies here, I see not a great deal to do. So, in my view, therefore, I'm more interested in the knock-on effect in terms of markets that are influenced by the currencies, and that would take me straight on to the supply inelasticity trades. And that weakness of the dollar predictably knocked back a number of the metals. We had to gold, which had gotten up to 390 at one stage, 390.35, fell back to 384.85, where it is right now. Silver, in which I have not an inconsiderable interest, that had fallen down. Again, it was down about 8 or 9 cents at one stage, but then it rebounded, and it's on the July silver, it's sort of 573.5, still on the lower side of its trading range, but encountering support above this 550 level. I've illustrated that. Can have a look at that. Said I was happier to hold a position in silver. I hope this is not just bravado here because I have the position, but I'm happier to hold silver that I've repurchased on this setback that we've seen than a portfolio of diversified equities. Am I happier to hold the silver than a portfolio of oil shares? Well, that's a more difficult call, and I have that Investec Energy Fund. As you know, the Investec Global Energy Fund, that's code GUIGLEI. I'll just repeat that, GUIGLEI, space GU, because it's a Guernsey listed. That's a front end fund. But that front-end cost can be negotiated well down. It hasn't done anything since I bought it. Well, it pulled back a little bit, and it's probably just a fraction below where I bought it, but it's steadied up recently. It's a long-term holding. I want to have a stake in energy long-term. I haven't been more aggressive there because I said I'd only add to it on weakness, but if it were to come lower, I've got a fair amount of cash, as I mentioned before, and I would certainly consider buying a bit more of that in my self-administered pension funds. But I'm happier to trade the actual futures markets. Now, natural gas, which I bought previously, I mean, I'm not going to do everything in futures markets, am I? And I'll take advantage of the tax benefits such as they are with pension funds, but I get even better tax benefits with my futures trading if I do it through spread betting. But you remember natural gas, and I'll probably put a chart of this up here tomorrow as well. But it's been choppy recently. I've tended to, well, I was about to say I tend to buy it on the setbacks. I've done that a couple of times, but I've also bought when it's been quite steady, and I felt that it was just going to extend the upward trend. And when I've done that, because it's been ranging, I very quickly found myself in a loss on that position. And when I've bought when there's a setback, you know, I mentioned that key day reversal that we saw last week. I think it was last Friday, and upside key day reversal. And that's pushed up again very steadily. So it's currently up here at 6.573 on the September contract. So that's getting within striking distance of the high that we saw in late May. Now, so I've got one position that I purchased not very well there, and the other half of the position was purchased very well. On a first-in, first-out basis, I have the, well, I may have the luxury of deciding whether I want to step away from that, the more expensive purchase at a small profit, and just leave the other one with an in-the-money stop. On here, I'll think about that. But the natural gas is one that I've been trading now for some months, and I'm likely to be trading that for some time to come. In here, overall, I prefer that to the oil contracts, which are far more emotive politically, at any rate, particularly during a U.S. election year. In other commodities where I have an interest, excuse me, the lead market quietly steady in here. I may well sell that if I get the opportunity to do so a little higher, because I don't think that any of these commodities are going to get the sort of trends that we saw last year and at the beginning of this year. I don't think that any of them are going to be able to do that anytime soon. You know, it's the same old story that you get some very clear rhythmic trends, and they'll run for a number of months, sometimes even years. And then those patterns will give way to big reactions and lots of whipsaw, churning, trading type of activity. And we're in the latter right now. And because so many trends had moved together in tandem, as it were, that we are now in a situation where so many trends are ranging. So when I look around, and I've said this is a risky period, the risk-reward ratio, I've said this in practically every audio, is not all that attractive in many of these markets. It's really a matter of saying, well, maybe this might do a little bit in here, or maybe this is worth an opportunity. But I find in my own trading that has, when it's worked best in here when I've been trying to do it on a buy low, sell high basis. In other words, not shorting what I want to short until after we've seen a technical rally, and not buying what I want to buy until after I've seen a sell-off. It's pretty obvious advice, isn't it? But it's the sort of thing that people tend to remember. And then there are a lot of trading rules which sound very sensible, such as cut your losses and let your profits run. When you let your profits run in this market and they turn into losses quickly enough, you cut your losses in this market. If you buy something that's seen a little bit of a sell-off and it goes a little lower, you cut your loss. Well, you'll be taking predominantly losses here in this environment. So I think it's stay on the sidelines. Those of you who wish to trade, need to trade. I don't need to trade, but I kind of do like to keep my hand in to a certain degree. It certainly does concentrate the mind, but do so on a small scale relative to what you might consider otherwise. I've pretty well done that except for the silver position. And do it on a buy low, sell high basis. Take your profits while the ranges persist. Have an excellent evening.